Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is Sharon Rose. Sharon is a filmmaker, teacher, writer, choreographer, and Fulbright Senior Research Scholar in World Mythology, Religion, and the Sacred Arts of Dance, Music, and Theater. She is the writer-director of the feature-length documentary 2012 The Odyssey and its sequel Time Wave 2013. And she authored the award-winning book The Path of the Priestess, a guidebook for awakening the divine feminine. This barely touches upon her numerous accomplishments, so let's welcome her live to the show now and find out more about this amazing person. Hi, Sharon. How are you?
I'm fine. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good. Well, I would just want to tell you that your films are just amazing. They're just stunning films. I can't say enough where they take you. They're beyond the cutting edge. They're just wonderful films. So I just wanted to say that.
Oh, thank you very much. And I must acknowledge my husband, Jay Widener.
Well, yes. I didn't want to bring him up too much because I didn't want to take the focus off of you, but yes, he's quite an amazing guy, isn't he?
Yes. our films, and I have to say ours,
yeah,
because they're really films that are created, produced, and realized by the two of us, by our dreams and our visions. So it's a true alchemical relationship.
Mm-hmm. When did you start making the films, and when did you start having the vision to create something so shift that is such a paradigm shifter?
Well, it's that feminine way, you know. The feminine is the all-inclusive we.
Right.
We met in '96, and he had come from a Hollywood background, and I had come from a New York background.
Oh.
New York theater and performance art and...
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, India and Bollywood.
Oh, yeah, I love that stuff.
So when we met, we were just very intrigued with all the research that one another had done and that we both really wanted to... We loved storytelling.
Uh-huh.
We loved video, we loved filmmaking, and we loved esotericism.
Ah.
And so it was this combining of two visions, male and female, east and west, really, because most of my training was eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And we began to see, my work for years and years has been to look for the commonalities in traditions.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a thread that goes through it. We're all human beings.
Right.
And it's time we realized that. So we had this vision together. We were intrigued by the mysteries. We went deeper, and both of us had these backgrounds, and it was our dream to be doing exactly what we're doing now.
Wow. You can't ask for more than to be able to live your dream.
It's quite a challenge, though. You know, it's funny, in Time Wave, we're talking one of the kind of chapters, themes in there has to do with the nature of time itself.
Uh-huh.
And that, as we approach what Kurzweil calls the singularity,
mm-hmm.
Every one of us can feel every day that time seems to be getting faster and faster and faster. And what we all need to do is take a lot of deep breaths and realize that there's only one time, and that is right now.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. And in the meantime, it does feel in some ways that we're being squeezed, so that it's almost like I've noticed of late, I feel like I'm being squeezed in to get into the moment.
Yes, it's like being in a pressure cooker.
I just used that analogy today. It really does. In fact, it feels like the whole planet is in a pressure cooker.
Yes, it is. It is predictions from, prophecies. Beyond all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, one just has to open their eyes, turn on the TV. Many of the things that we spoke about in 2012, The Odyssey,
uh-huh.
in that film, when we interviewed Jose Arguelles and Greg Braden and John Jenkins and Alberto Viola and Jay, and more.
Yes, yes.
You know, the things that we were speaking about, you know, what was coming towards us. It's in the news now. It's not only, it's on, you know, cable TV news now.
Yes, yes.
So one merely has to just take a glance at any newspaper, any television set, listen to any radio, and you're going to hear the times they are a-changing.
You know, but it's still, even with all of the shifts and changes that are apparent, doesn't it seem like the majority of people are still kind of snoring?
Unconscious.
Yeah, that's exactly the word.
Well, I think that, you know, when we started the interviews for 2013,
mm-hmm.
excuse me a moment, I have a cold.
Oh, okay.
We've been doing a lot of promotion and flying lately.
Oh, geez.
And it's kind of hard on the health system.
Yes, definitely.
One of the first interviews I did was with Jose Arguelles. And for me, coming out of serious background in, you know, Hindu, Tantra, and Tibetan Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, initiatory transmission-based systems,
uh-huh.
Speaking with Jose, I felt the same kind of energetic that one feels when he was speaking about his vision of the Mayan calendar, that one feels when they are getting one of these transmissions.
Oh.
And he said that we are living amidst a dream spell.
Huh.
And then when I interviewed Alberto Vildo, he spoke to the same subject by calling it the cultural trance. And then Rion Eisler called it the dominator trance. And I like to call it the glamour.
Huh.
It's though, you know, some force has pulled the wool over our eyes and made us unconscious.
Yes, yes.
And perhaps this force thinks it's better, you know, that everyone really felt the chaos. That, you know, it would be even more chaos. I don't know. I just, you know, see these themes running through our world now. And since I have the blessings to be able to speak with these people who have been looking at it for many years, and also, you know, trace it way, way back into the alchemical tradition or the tantric tradition or the Karo shamanic tradition or the Mayan tradition, you know, to give us some kind of perspective
mm-hmm.
on what is going on our planet right now, because we all feel it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. Well, of all of the prophecies that you've researched, and you've traveled to probably most of the, or many of the sacred sites around the world, what did you discover from doing that, and were there particular sites that seemed to retain their power, and what were they saying to you personally? Is that too much?
Generally, you know, sacred sites, you know, have a resonance.
Okay.
And they're created like, I'll give you an example of a cathedral.
Okay.
Okay, so take like Chartres Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And I was first there with Jay. In fact, we were married in France.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, if you look at Chartres Cathedral, the first thing, if you look at the floor plan, it is laid out in the shape of an Egyptian ankh, the key of life.
Right.
And the Egyptian ankh is very interesting because, you know, the deities, like Isis, will hold it, and then you'll see rays of light, vibration, shooting from that into the, you know, the devotees in the paintings. And so, you know, that key is laid out there. It's also a very interesting symbol, the ankh, because it is a symbol of both the male and female put together. Unlike the cross, which is missing the female. The ankh, you know, has a circular top and then a kind of cross.
Right.
Right. So
right.
That's number one. Secondly, the cathedral is always built, it's built on the former wells of the Druid tradition.
Huh.
The holy wells where they played worship to the mother, the earth. You know, the water, the feminine, the creative force, you know. And then the steeple with the cross on top is pulling down the energy from the sky, the male energy. So the well underneath is bringing this feminine, and the, you know, the steeple coming down is bringing the masculine. So it becomes a kind of tantric resonance chamber.
Ah.
Where, and what I mean by that is where, you know, the person who is coming to that temple, to that cathedral, is transformed by feeling those two energies in their body. And then if you've ever been in them, the harmonic resonance, the sound, is extraordinary. You know, and in the teaching, in the ancient teachings of the Bon tradition of Tibet, shamanic tradition, and the tantric tradition, you know, they say that manifestation comes from sound to light to rays of light into form. And so when you're in, standing, you know, in the cathedral, also Chard, of course, has a labyrinth, you know,
oh, yeah.
which is showing you the way to the center of your being. And then you're looking up, you're in this vibratory field, and then you look up, and there, you know, the stained glass windows, which were, you know, alchemical creations, the art of glass making, and, you know, what they used to make, like the tints, the way they constructed these, were also created to have a very powerful, actual felt experience for the person there. To really, all temples, you know, anywhere, were created to give the person an experience of what I would say is their divine inheritance.
Oh.
The light and sound and energy of divinity, which is what they are essentially. And we've always been that, but we forget.
No,
you know,
kidding.
Caught in the veils of the modern age.
We become and disconnected.
We become extremely disconnected.
Yeah.
Last night, I had the real blessing of meeting a woman in a Hindu saint named Amachi.
Oh, and, the Divine Mother?
Oh, what a blissful, transcendent experience.
Wow.
But what I found really interesting is she was talking about how she was in Iowa. And this was a while ago. I guess she hadn't been in the country for a while. And she was in an airport, and she noticed that all these guys were walking around looking like they were madmen, you know, gesticulating, talking to themselves, completely out of touch with the present, you know, where they were on the, in the, on the planet. And she had no idea. She had never seen Bluetooth before.
Oh. Ah, yes.
So we are... How many of us are actually, again, present in the moment, present here? You know, I believe really that the task of this time, and many of us are, you know, have been trained now, many of the people my age, the baby boomers.
Right.
You know, we have actually gone out and studied all these forms and done, you know, 30, 40 years of meditation.
Right.
Serious practitioners. And that it's time for us to step up and become the elders that we seem to reject in our culture. We didn't really go for that kind of, you know, perspective that our parents had.
Right.
But I'm more and more finding that the younger generation, which we've been in touch with a lot because we've been doing 2012 conferences, and we were just at a big conference called Lightning in a Bottle. And it has been really inspiring to go out and be with these young people because it's their world that's being created. And they're being fed so much fear and so much darkness.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I feel that my role is to, you know, it's like funny, it's Galadriel, you know, when in Tolkien, you know,
Lord
of the Rings, when she says, "Come back to the light, Frodo, come back to the light."
Yeah.
It's like, I feel that we have such potential as human beings to regrow our planet, to reshape our world, that potential and that the galactic alignment and all this 2012 is really, you know, putting it into focus that we're at a crucial point and that every moment we have a choice.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it's our world. And so, you know, to be with these, you know, 18 to 45-year-olds who are, you know, having all these workshops on sustainability and community and, you know, what can we do?
And yeah.
It's so uplifting, and more of us need to be out there now.
Ah.
You know, leading the way, not, you know, into the pain and fear and suffering. I mean, clearly, anyone, you just have to open your eyes to see it.
Yeah.
And feel it. But, however, you know, we can always do our best to live in truth and in love and compassion.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Would you say that a lot of the kids that you're seeing are considered, maybe I'm throwing these labels out there, and they don't need to be, but the crystals, the indigos, the starseed, and so on?
Yeah, I was asked about that the other day. And see, I believe that every person, every child is an indigo child or a crystal child.
Yeah.
I think that it's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all a matter of, you know, how you're raised.
Right.
I was thinking, you know, I was reflecting the other day in the Hindu tantric teachings, they talk about these four ages of existence that we go through.
Uh-huh.
And it starts where we are just born straight from divinity into light. And this is the age of gold. And it's just extraordinary. We're not even embodied yet. We're just sort of these magical forms.
Mm.
And there's no veils between life and death. And with the Silver Age, those veils begin to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that because a lot of people, you know, want us or feel that we are moving, you know, this extreme chaos and kind of distillation, purification process
uh-huh.
that we seem to be going through is, you know, kind of a precursor to this new golden age of light that's coming.
A lot of people believe that we're at the tail end of the Iron Age, the Kali
yes.
Yuga.
So I was thinking about that fact, and then I kept thinking about this the golden age, there were no veils between life and death. What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started thinking about the nature of how the mind works.
Yeah.
You know, and the mind, you know, we have these thoughts, they rise, they appear, they dissolve.
Yeah.
We go into dream states.
Yeah.
We go into daydream states, you know.
Yeah.
We go into, you know, well, in the Tibetan tradition, they talk about the different bardos. So there's, you know, the in-between life and death.
Right.
And I was thinking how, you know, we're so trained in this world to fear death.
Yeah.
To not even only, you know, not even really look at our dreams or, you know, be encouraged to really develop the capacities that we really have as human beings.
Yeah, yeah.
And the capacities that were developed in these earlier ages, and the only reason that we know about them is because there have been these ancient cultures like the Tibetans or the Karo or the Hindus or the Maya, all these different cultures
right.
That have preserve these teachings. And actually, you know, I mean, in Tibet, they can still go out, you know, naked and make the snow melt.
Yeah, wow.
With their bodies, you know. Wow. That's they can ingest light and live that way.
Mm.
They can, there are many documented stories of great masters giving their last teaching and dissolving into rainbow light.
Wow. Wow.
So we all, you know, these teachers were here, have been here, and these stories and legends and myths, which I call the sacred mysteries,
yes.
that were the her story,
yeah.
the story of the goddess time of the Partnership Society, as opposed to his story,
yeah.
which is really, you know, the it's kind of me. It's a kind of adolescence of the human race.
Yeah. Well, didn't the male energy kind of wallpaper over the divine feminine somewhere along the way?
But that's the nature of the cycle.
Okay, okay.
That's why I say kind of adolescence.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. This seems like, if anything, we're going backwards into our babyhood, you know, almost like we're reverting to the primordial ooze, it seems.
That's funny you should say that, because we've been, for the last year, we've been interviewing experts such as Brian Weiss and Stan Grof and Robert Thurman and Alberto Villoldo and many more, Damian Brinkley, about death and the afterlife. And a lot of them talk about a life review process.
Right, right.
And sometimes I wonder if the human race isn't going through that, and that's why time's speeding up so fast.
That as a body, the human race is like a body that is going through the death and rebirth as a body.
Yes,
because
we all are the immense body of divinity. Every atom, every plant, everything, every cell is divinity coming to know itself.
Wow. Well, it seems like we have a long way to go. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think we're being stirred up. I think we're being woken up.
Yeah.
You know, well, we have to. We're, you know, if one just takes a look, one would think that the human race is committing suicide.
It sure appears that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned fear earlier, and it seems that that's almost a tool of manipulation.
Well, see, get back to that death thing. See, if you were raised instead of, if we were raised like in Aboriginal society, say.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that the time in life, you know, in the day, and time in the dream, and time in the, journey,
right.
You know, to other dimensions.
Shamanic time.
There was no real distinction. They were all of equal importance.
Yeah.
So if we started to see that our minds are like a thread, you know, that weaves together all these different states of consciousness. That's who we are. There is an essence.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's what Tantra means, the word.
Huh.
Not just sex, as, you know, of course, our bizarre culture would take the most, you know, sensational part
right.
of it and sensationalize it.
Right, but it's also a tool to the highest, to connecting to the highest within.
Yes.
You know,
and we've
turned it into something that is something to sell, something that sells things.
Well, see, at the essence, those teachings, those sexual teachings that are, you know, part of Tantra, and the Tantras were written for the Iron Age. Because we are the most embodied. We are the most material.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not those beings of light flying around, you know. We're like really concrete and dense, right? And so the closest experience that that most of us have to a pure, you know, union of one with divine is the sexual experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why these teachings were part of this tradition. You know, it's not just, you know, like some guys wandering around going, hey, babe, you know, I know all this tantra.
Right, right.
And, you know, use it as a means to, I don't know.
It's
a path of really shedding the ego.
Right.
And allowing, you know, it's
dissolving and disappearing.
Yes.
And yet being.
Yes.
You lose yourself and you get yourself at the same time.
Yes.
You know, I can't help but wonder, because I hear it talked about in various forms, and the closest I can come to grasping what might be happening in terms of there being a dark force on the planet is that the astral plane is somehow interfering or affecting us here, or that there is something that has figured out a way to manipulate us or derail us. Does that resonate with you?
Just want to be enlightened. You know, they are just grasping towards the light, you know. And so there's this great rabbi, Adin Steinsaltz, in Israel. And he talks about how in every moment, with every thought, with every word, we are creating angels or demons.
Huh.
Right? And then they kind of hang out in a field, right?
Yeah.
Every action creates another action, you know?
Right,
and
right.
Our karma, and so you know what I'm talking about with that field, the luminous energy body that exists, you know, it interpenetrates the human body and it exists all around the body. They call it the aura. There's lots of things. But all that happens to it is encoded there first. And so my friend Alex Gray, have you ever seen his paintings?
Oh, I love them. Yes, amazing
yes.
work.
So he has some extraordinary paintings where, you know, the human being, they're like in despair.
Yeah.
You know, their whole body posture is downward, and it's like they have chains on them. And there's little beings that are, like, sucking on their energy field.
Yeah.
And it's all this, like, cloudy, weird colors, you know, as opposed to when he shows the vibrant rainbow energy field.
Right.
And so, you know, all of our karma, what he's showing is that. And in the Iron Age, it's like we are the most beset by all of this. I don't remember who it was, but, you know, they said that, well, at the end of time, all the souls that ever existed come back around because they want to be liberated, because that's the moment of liberation. So maybe that could be the force. But I'll tell you something about this darkness. Because I'm trained in the Tibetan tradition.
Okay.
And so what are you trained to, you know, to deal with these? They really just want love. That's all they really want. Just look at George Bush, for example, you know.
Yeah.
That guy, he needed to be loved a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and seen and not try to, you know, he's like a projection of somebody else's ideas of what a person should be.
Yeah, yeah.
How much of the essential person is there?
It doesn't appear like there's much.
And so, to me, that's really sad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I wonder, see, again, we go to this dream spell.
Yeah.
This trance. I read, when I was doing research for my book, I read about the work of Edward Bernays.
Huh.
And Edward Bernays was the father of advertising.
Okay.
He actually wrote a book called Propaganda that I think it was Goebbels kept on his bedside.
Oh, my goodness.
But he was the person that brought all these kind of hidden agendas and making these, you know, like getting all these doctors together to advocate for some product and paying them off, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
That kind of deceit.
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of, you know, lead people in a certain direction.
Oh, it seems like everything is that way.
Yeah.
But,
you know, we don't have to follow that. You know, in the end,
yeah.
You know, each of us is a free person. We can be afraid of what they're going to do to us. And just not take action.
Yeah.
And just kind of die. Or we can actually work with the nature of our minds.
Mm.
And, I mean, these days, how many of us even sit and remember that we're breathing? You know, just actually sit and let go.
Yeah.
And just float.
Yeah.
You know, float in the light, the pure light of who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we really need to. When I started 2012, The Odyssey, I actually hadn't watched TV for a while, a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And I was so appalled by what was going on. I was so appalled. It was just like these hucksters.
Yeah, yeah.
And twisting everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just
it's scary.
Playing, you know, playing our sentiments,
uh-huh.
our sentimentality, our fears, playing our emotions like
yeah.
these, you know, masters.
Oh, they've got it down.
Right.
They've
right.
got it down.
And so, you know, and at the same time, somehow leading us to consume the entire planet.
At quite a fast clip, too.
Right, and create these cravings. That's what I call them.
Yeah.
It's just we're lost in these cravings that just, you know, it's like one thought happens and it builds with another thought, another thought, another thought, another thought, and we're in a whirlwind.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally.
So we really need to learn now, and the energy's coming for this now, to go back in nature, sit with each other, you know, sing together, dance together,
yeah.
feel the earth, pray to the, you know, to the mother and nature in all her beauty, and remember that we really do have these other capacities, that we don't have to focus our mind all the time in that spell. We can break free, as Alberto says, break free of the cultural trance.
Yeah.
And live a life that has a very different perspective than most people do.
Maybe more authentic.
Oh, yeah. I believe it's
you know, but it's
where
so,
we should be.
It's so... You know, I completely understand what you're saying, because I've isolated myself into the country and, you know, shut off the television set and so on. And it does take time to get
yes,
back into natural harmony and a rhythm. And even then it's difficult, you know. So I'm just wondering, you know, people who have to hold down jobs that are relying on corporate positions or flipping burgers at a Burger King, I just don't see how... It just makes it so difficult. Everything seems to be set up against that. It's almost as if there would have to be a complete alteration of the incoming energies to spur that shift.
Well, some people, look, you know, clearly life in America is changing.
Well, yes, yes.
Yes, okay, so we're yes. not going to be able to fly all over the world.
Right.
Food is going to be really expensive.
Yes.
We're running out of oil. There's salmon starting. Our weather is crazy.
Oh, yes.
Now, maybe all this is happening to wake us up. Now,
yeah.
when you know, these disasters like Katrina happened, you know, I talked to people who were there, who lived there, and said that, you know, aside from some really dark things that happened there in that, I think it was a stadium or something,
yeah.
That people came together
yeah, yeah.
as human beings in crisis in ways they never would otherwise.
Yeah.
And so maybe we're just creating this crisis to yeah. wake us up.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But there's clearly, if you're talking on energetics, last week, Jay and I went to Denver to this amazing astrology conference where we interviewed 15 of the top Western astrologers.
Oh, wow.
About what is happening between, you know, their perspective.
Oh.
What's happening between now and 2016.
Oh.
And it was fascinating. It was truly fascinating because, you know, overall, their view really came in tune with a lot of things I've been hearing about, you know, the years around 2012.
Right.
Now, the phenomenon that's going on, you know, astrologically, is that Pluto, planet of transformation, is going into Capricorn, which is Saturn, which is structure.
Uh-huh.
So that we're you know, that means that we're going into a phase where our structures of how we live,
right.
of society, are going to be transformed at the very base into and purified.
Ah, good.
You know, at the very foundation.
Good.
And that is not always easy. And then Uranus, the Pluto, the planet of kind of electricity and excitement and trickster and creativity and you know, nuclear energy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which actually, you know, kind of represents the heavens.
Okay.
That's going into Aries. And so what's going to happen is they're going into a square. And so it could be many things. They talked about different times in history that kind of reflected this period.
Okay.
The 60s.
Oh.
The 60s, Pluto and Uranus were conjunct. So in many ways, this period that's coming between now and 2016 is like, you know, the people of the 60s coming face to face with their mortality. And maybe the mortality of the planet.
Right.
And whether we can actually come to realize that amazing, you know, bliss and wonder and openness and possibility that we felt that for the world at that time.
Yeah.
Can we find a way to shift this dream spell into, you know, a world of alternative means of living our lives and being in community again and using our mantras and songs and to help the plants grow and, you know, really discovering, see, that's the Uranian energy. It's a discovering all these new methods.
Huh.
So, you know, they said that it's almost like, you know, freedom or fascism. It could be any way.
Oh, dear.
And the choice is up to us, and that's why we felt that the focus on 2012 was a real, you know, kind of an alchemical thing, where if you're focusing on something that's close, you know, and you see all, it helps you see that things are really shifting. You know, then it's time to wake up and do it. Or, you know, I don't know, maybe some will just go to sleep, but
I don't know.
There are a lot waking up. I was really, really inspired by the young people that I met. You
well,
know, that they're really looking, and they're really, they care. They're so, you see, but we're so polite to each other, you know, no fighting, no bad word. It's just so respectful. And I think that's what's happened in somehow in our political correctness. It's gone overboard. You know? And, and it's caused a kind of backlash.
No kidding.
And we've lost the ability to actually just look in the eyes of another person, regardless of what they look like. What age they are, anything, and say, wow, this is a human being. My friend.
I had to go through some F seminars to reach that point.
Wow!
You know, I mean, it took a whole 2 weekends just to get to the point where we could do that and actually gaze into each other's eyes and get each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we put up all these masks. You know, we how many? I like to talk about this one. You know, I mean, how many thoughts that go through your head do you think are your original thoughts? My son. I sent him to a Waldorf school. And if you know anything about the Waldorf school, they say that they're not allowed to watch TV until after the sixth grade. Because it destroys their imagination. So when you think of, you know, those thoughts that start whirling, where are they coming from? You know, and how many of them are your parents' expectations? So that's why it's so important to just sit and just even watch how your thoughts arise and go and just try to detach. And, I mean, that's why we use mantra for people, you know, when you have fear, when if you it's a device for, you know, just kind of keeping that flow going that I was talking about earlier, that essential part of you that goes through all your states of consciousness. And find a way to find that center that's always there, you know, amidst the whirlpool.
The calm in the eye of the storm.
Exactly. And that's what each of us have to be right now. Because it's clearly a storm is a-coming.
Oh, yes. And I don't think that, I think no matter how much we study or research or try to prepare for it, I personally don't feel that I will be prepared for whatever it is that's coming. I just think that it's going to be so intense that it'll just bowl us over.
I think every moment we're being prepared for it now. That's why time is speeding up. We're being asked every day to step up to a new level of responsibility.
Yep.
To a new level of awareness. That's the internet is doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank goodness.
You know, and we were talking about cell phones. I was talking about them to one of the young girls and how they seem to be, there's now a correspondence between the cell phone use and fertility rates and in women, and we're just losing our ability, you know, to have children because of many factors. And yet at the same time, in some ways, it's tuning us in. These phones are tuning us into what Jose Arguelles talks about. He says that we're moving into a phase where we're going to be telepathic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and once that really begins to happen, you know, those, in quotes, crystal child capacities, those demonic capacities are recovered.
Yes.
Who knows what we can do with our reality?
Oh, yeah.
And well, so for me, that's the key.
Yeah.
To find the methods, the means to recover what it means to be human, to recover our great, you know, ancient ability to interact with nature.
Yeah.
On a really positive level.
Well, doesn't that also require an opening in the heart? I mean,
well, that's exactly one of the Kero shamans in Time Wave 2013. He said he had a message for America in particular.
Uh-huh.
He said America has great brilliance, great mind, but now that they have to bring that mind down to the heart. Without the gifts of the heart, then you know we. we may not make it, and we won't make it. And that he also said that America has to take the lead in bringing peace to the world. Without America doing that, there is not much hope.
Wow.
So the love, that's the essence of everything. That's how you deal with those demons you were talking about. That's all they want.
Yeah.
That's all anyone wants. They want to be seen for that essential, you know, treasure that they are.
Yeah.
And have that nurtured and be loved. You know, underneath, you know, even the darkest of beings, they wouldn't exist if there was no light.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, you know, in terms of the Mayan prophecies, we've just passed the midpoint of the fifth night, according to, you know, some of their calendars.
Mm-hmm.
So we're moving. It seems like it's been pretty quiet in terms of, you know, the kind of upheavals that could have occurred. Or maybe we're just, you know, as we approach the end of the fifth night in November, maybe things are just going to heat up. I don't know. What do you think?
Like the astrological map, nothing is set in. You know, it's. I mean, the Iron Age is about putting things in stone, but you know, if we're releasing it from that,
right,
then nothing is set. That's why we're talking now. That's why we're out there, because it's time for us to understand.
Right.
That we, every moment, we have a choice with every word, with every action. We're at that place, you know, to love, which is really what we should be doing.
Right.
Or to be in fear, to be dragged off into the darkness.
Yeah.
Or to become the beings of light that we really are. And to shed that darkness and, I mean, anybody can remember when they were a child and they felt totally free and in nature and just released and, you know, with abandon, with the kind of bliss that, you know, is rare.
Yeah.
And why can't we just recover that?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure working on it.
Me too. Me too. It could be challenging in these times.
Yeah. I've noticed a lot of buzz on the internet lately too about ETs and UFOs, and you know we're beginning to live in such a multidimensional world. Do you think that might also play into our awakening?
Well, multidimensional. You can come at that from many dimensions. You know, there's stories, and there's stories, and there's stories.
Yeah.
You know, why do we hear certain stories? You know, stories get passed down. Generally, they're shifted by the dominant civilization.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is truth? I think we know inside what is truth. And, of course, again, it leads to love. You know, it leads to love.
Yeah.
So that's really, in the end, when people ask me, well, what can I do? Okay. Number one, stop lying.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one woman, you know, after hearing that said, well, you know, I think I can stop lying to others, but can I stop lying to myself? But that's really why we need to come together, to be mirrors for each other and help each other through this distillation, this time when you know the lead of our being is being transformed into the gold of enlightenment. And we all have, regardless of what you get and what time it is, we always have that potential to just completely transform and be free. And then in the Tibetan tradition, of course, you take a bodhisattva vow that you will continue to work from whatever dimensions, because they talk a lot about these, you know, many dimensions of subtlety, you know, the energetics. And they talk about, you know, in the Vedas, you know, all these beings coming from other places. In the Dzogchen Tibetan teachings, they say that it's been taught on 13 different star systems, and they constantly, you know, throughout the world, they talk about these, one might label them these days, ETs. You know, but I never heard anything about grays in these teachings. <You know? laughs> I mean, I heard some weird things about demons.
Yeah.
But I never even heard of one that looked like a gray.
Yeah.
So I don't really know it's not my place of research into the kind of ET phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, one thing that you mentioned is that it's important to stay out of fear. And how important is keeping a sense of humor?
That's the most important. That's the most important.
Yeah.
You know, without that, how can you survive?
Yeah. Well, it's kept me alive for a few years.
Oh, yes. And especially be able to laugh at once.
Oh, absolutely. There are times when this seems like a cosmic joke. When you step out far enough, when you step far enough outside of it, it really seems like this is a funny place.
Well, lately it just felt that things are speeding so fast. I just feel like I'm on this riding a surfboard, and just these waves are constantly. And as soon as I sort of can make the crest of one, and I think I'm going to have time to relax.
Yeah.
The next one appears. And it's just, that's why I say we have to step up.
Yeah.
Find a balance. Amidst the storm that is here. It's not coming now. It's here.
It's here now, yeah.
And people do not, you know, that's why, you know, pharmaceutical drugs are so prevalent.
Yeah.
You know, people, they just can't. It's almost like the old mechanisms, you know, the family structure's been pulled apart, community's been pulled apart. So the old mechanisms, it's like we've just been completely isolated from each other.
Yeah.
And so the old mechanisms by which we could learn to deal with life are gone. In 2013, Time with 2013, Jean Houston says, you know, we have lost the hearth, the place where the grandparents sat and told the tales.
Oh, yes.
You know,
yes.
The great tales, the great teachings of the heroes and heroines. And we replaced that with the television set.
Oh, yeah.
She says, but the problem is, you know, no hearth, no heart.
Yeah.
So once again, we come to the heart. And once again, we find that that is truly the place of refuge. The place that Christ talked about, the place of love.
Yeah, yeah.
And grace. Grace, that's such a beautiful word.
Yeah.
You know, how many of us even experience that anymore, grace? Everything's hard-edged, everything's like... But that all will change. We will come into balance, you know. I think that regardless of what we go through, it's all a learning experience, and it just depends how we want to face it.
Well, as you said, death is not something to be feared, so whatever comes after that, you know, it sounds like a wonderful place from the people that I've had on the show that have talked about near-death experiences, and it sounds a lot better than here.
Well, no. You can't say that because there is something so... Well, in the East, they call the body the precious human body. Because through this physicality, through the transmutation of this, through feeling everything, experiencing it in the flesh,
mm-hmm.
It's like the fuel for realization, it's called enlightenment. So, you know, our task now, what I tell people, is the ones that know how to navigate these, you know, multidimensional realms and commune with whoever, right?
Right.
They've got to bring that into this body on this earth so that they're walking, you know, they're not just out there flying around.
Right.
But
right.
They're bringing all that knowledge and make it work practically on this planet in this time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we need some help. And it's got to be not just flying out there and like, you know, oh, man, you know, I had this great trip. Well, unless you have something to bring back.
Right, right.
You know, it's just kind of a masturbation. You know, it's just kind of... And, I mean, that was part of the whole 60s problem because we had no one to initiate us.
Yeah.
No, we had no teachers. You know, we were just dosed with these psychedelics, which opened us up to all these realms. But there was no one to give us a map of where we were going or, you know, what were the symbols we were seeing? What did this mean? And that's the beauty of all these shamanic traditions. They had these initiations, and that's why when I sat with the Caros, the Caro shaman healers in Peru, for the movie, there was a sense of clarity, presence, and extraordinary intent of mind that is rare. You know, they were from birth. You know, raised to perceive reality from a very different perspective. They don't long for, you know, a zillion clothes and 15 pairs of shoes and, you know, all the trappings of materialism.
Right.
They commune through time. They're very present here, but they have the capacity to bring the lessons from these realms, these outer realms, right into this planet and... you know, plant their seeds here. And that's also a really strong thing I want to say. It's time for us to plant the seeds of the new age. We have to become, you know, the gardeners. It's that time.
Well, if it isn't now, it is never going to happen.
You know, who knows? I mean,
well, you
go
know,
off into the land of nanobots
you're
and
right,
you know, Terminator.
Right. So you're saying that it's time for us all to step up to the plate and
exactly
and be what we are already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember who we are.
Remember who we are.
And all of the work that we've done in Sacred Mysteries. You know, all of the different films we've made,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a portrait documentary with someone like Alex Gray, or whether it's, you know, sound yoga teaching with Shanti Shivani, or it's 2012, or you know, ones we're working on. All of them are there to show us the amazing nature, multidimensional nature of who we are.
Yes, yes. We're almost at the end of the show now. I've gone by so fast. It just flew by. Why don't you tell us how the people can get hold of your videos and find out more.
Our website, www.sacredmysteries.com. We're doing 2012 conferences. The next one is coming up November 1st and 2nd in San Francisco. Our movie Time Wave 2013 is not available to purchase yet because it's in screenings throughout the U.S. and Canada, and now we're getting requests from other countries. And if anybody is interested in screening it, they can, you know, get a group of people together or take it over to their local, you know, New Age store or spiritual center or Unity Church and request that they show it.
Ah.
And, you know, we're making all these partnerships to bring, you know, this uplifting, yet awakening, you know,
right.
kind of films out so that we can all start dialoguing about it. We can all get involved. And we can all create that community that we need so badly.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I certainly appreciate your work, the work that you're doing, and I'll do what I can to, you know, spread the word. And
thank you.
I just want to thank you and Jay, because it is a partnership, and in a sense, we're all partnering together. You know, I'm a partner. We all need to learn how to be partners with each other and spread this information around so we can share it and grow together.
Yes.
So I just want to thank you very much for being on tonight, Sharon. It's been wonderful.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
And I'd like to have you back again sometime soon, and we'll find out where we're at when we're there.
Okay, next installment coming up.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Sharon.
You're welcome.
All right, and good night, everybody. This has been a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Good night.